Remaker's Mark Podcast, Episode Alpha, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. Welcome to the Remaker's Mark Podcast, where we remake our favorite movies for you. Today is October 17th. This is episode number Alpha, our first run, and we're discussing the movie Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. Today joining me, we have Andy Wicks.
Hoi hoi.
Jeremy Nilsson.
Hello.
Lee Hochstein.
Yo, whoa.
And Mark Josting.
Hello.
Thanks, gentlemen. Thanks for joining us. So as we said, today is the first run-through of the Remaker's Mark podcast. Who knows if this will ever see the light of day, but we're giving it a shot, and maybe we'll share it with our closest friends, people who won't judge us too strongly. So a little bit about Remaker's Mark. Remaker's Mark is a podcast about how we, big movie geeks, would want to remake some of our favorite movies. We've talked a lot about what movies we'd want to do, and there's going to be a whole slew of these to come. So we're talking about casting, you know, who are the major characters, who would you recast in those roles, and we're remaking these movies as though they are today. So it's not as though we're remaking a movie in the 50s or remaking a movie in the 60s. It would be if you were remaking the movie today, what would it look like? And that's what we're going to be doing. So we're talking about casting. We're talking about plot. So what are some plot lines that drove you nuts for years and years in some of your favorite movies that if you had a chance to fix, you could? What would you do? How would you change that? Would you change that? We're talking about technology, both in terms of filmmaking. So now that you have CG, or now that you have all these great digital resources at your disposal, how would that work? And then we're talking about technology in terms of what your characters would have at their disposal. So how many movies would last about an hour and a half less long if they had a cell phone in them? So that's what Remaker's Mark is going to be looking like. So this episode is going to be split up into two. So as we said, we're discussing the movie Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. The first episode will be published, and that will be talking about casting as well as a couple other segments. We've got some special features to discuss with you that we're really excited about. And then the second half will be split up for the plot and filmmaking and technology discussion along with other features as well. So that is what the episodes are going to look like. First and foremost, I want to thank our friends at Tipsy Pixels for promotional consideration for the Remaker's Mark podcast. Tipsy Pixels is a video game competition event held at a bar. And for nerds like us and the show here, and for people that hear about it, they all go, oh, I wish I thought of that. And it is a brilliant idea. So the next event is November 4th, 2012, which is a Sunday. It starts at 6 p.m. at the Triple Rock Social Club in Minneapolis, Minnesota, where we're set. And the game will be Super Smash Brothers Melee on the Wii. If you want to find out more about Tipsy Pixels, check them out at facebook.com/tipsypixels and check them out at @tipsypixels on Twitter. And again, that's Tipsy Pixels. So thank you to them for their support. So today's movie is Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. This was made in 1987, the year our great Minnesota Twins won the World Series. It was directed by the also great John Hughes, who has a tremendous lineage and has some of my favorite 80s movies ever. As far as my history goes with it, I don't remember when I first saw it, but I remember being pretty young. So I was born in 78. I don't know if I saw this when it first came out, if it was shortly thereafter, but I remember enjoying it and finding it very funny. Most of all, being a young lad, I remember the expletive-laden scene towards the end. We'll be talking about that a little bit more in the show. And I think, Andy, you said you had some remembrance of that as well, right?
Yeah, like all of us, I think, you know, going to church camp for the first time or something like that, it was kind of a watershed moment, because really that's where I learned the use of the F-bomb.
I like it. I like it. Yeah, it's a great movie. I really enjoyed revisiting it, and I'm really excited to talk about it further today. So that's a little bit about Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. So first and foremost, we're going to talk about casting. So that's what we're going to spend a lot of time on today, is who would we recast in the major roles? In this particular movie, you know, lots of movies have four or five major characters. This movie really only had two major characters. And those two characters are Neil Page, as played by Steve Martin, and the second character is Del Griffith, as played by John Candy. So those are going to be the two major roles that we're going to discuss today. In addition, there are a plethora of really, really unique, really interesting minor characters that they run into along the way that we're going to talk about as well. So some of those are the hick who they run into to give them a ride to the train, the state trooper who catches them towards the end of the movie, Neil Page's wife, who's a more major character, but we're still putting her in the minor character area. Kevin Bacon, who tries to steal a taxi from him at the beginning of the movie and is ultimately successful. And the other of which I don't recall off the top of my head because I'm a bad host. Anybody? Oh, the swearing lady. How could I forget Edie McClurg, the swearing lady? So we'll be discussing those as well. So first and foremost, let's talk about Steve Martin as Neil Page. So this character is an uptight marketing exec who lives in Chicago, who is trying to get home to New York City to be with his family for Thanksgiving. I'm sorry?
He's going from New York to Chicago.
Ah, you are correct. Thank you. He lives in Chicago. And he's trying to get home from New York City. Thank you. Good catch. So we're going to talk about who today would we recast for this particular role. So that involves, you know, why would you pick them? How are they similar? How are they different? You know, what would you change about the role as you recast this person? So the first person on the docket to discuss who they would recast in this role is Jer. Jer, take it away.
Absolutely. The character of Neil Page, I think, is a good mix of kind of a pushover, kind of somebody that is just letting things happen to them. But then the actor, I think, also needs to be able to hold their own as far as a scene and not be so overly consumed by Del Griffith, who is, as we'll talk about, a pretty all-consuming character. But so they'll need to be able to hold their own on that at the same time, but also being more of a meek pushover type character. And then I think a third thing is that they need to be able to have that freak out moment, which is one of the great scenes of Planes, Trains, and Automobiles in the hotel room when Steve Martin has finally had enough and just lets John Candy have it, and everything falls apart, and they end up breaking the relationship, and John Candy sleeps in the car that was on fire, and so on and so on. So I chose for that role Martin Freeman, who is a British actor. He's been in several movies recently. He was the main character in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. He was also is soon to be Bilbo Baggins in the Hobbit movie. And one of my favorite roles that he's been in recently is in the BBC series Sherlock. He plays Dr. Watson. And when I look at the character of Dr. Watson in that show, which is an updated version of Sherlock Holmes, Dr. Watson is all of the things that I would look for in the Neil Page role. He is oftentimes overshadowed by Sherlock Holmes, but at the same time holds his own, and they are on equal footing when you watch them on screen together, and has the ability to rise up and steal a scene, rise up and overpower Sherlock when needed, and when he gets to that breaking point. So it does add another little twist to the theme or the story of Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, being that here's a British guy, and I think that he should play a British guy. I don't think that he needs to Americanize his accent in any way. So that might be a difference that would have to be written in. Why is he going to Chicago? Not that there's not British people in Chicago. I don't mean to offend anybody that's British that's in Chicago.
There are no Brits in Chicago.
Come on. They did pass that one law, the infamous No Brits in Chicago law.
That's true. That was right after the fire, ironically enough.
Really cleaned up the city.
And so that's my pick. And when we get to the character of Del Griffith, I think that I found a fairly good foil for him as well that changes the two roles and the dynamic there, but also keeps the spirit of the quote-unquote buddy comedy that this sort of becomes at times together. So Andy, what are your thoughts? Or anybody for that matter.
Sorry, mute button.
Good picture.
Mute buttons happen to the best.
No, I think that's a great picture. I wasn't expecting the across the pond pick. But as you explained it, I think that Martin Freeman would do a very good job of the kind of neurotic, high-strung, type A executive with a little bit of the slow boil that would ready to erupt at any moment by the protagonist, Del Griffith.
And that, I think, is the key to that, to the character of Neil Page, is that that simmering below the surface. You can feel the tension rising in him as the movie goes along, and you're just waiting for that last straw snapping point.
Yep, I like it. It's interesting how Steve Martin plays that with almost like an icy neurosis that's there, but it's really an undercurrent, whereas I think he might have a little bit more of a twitchy neurosis, but I think he can do both. And I think the example of his Watson is really, really excellent. So good pick, Jer. Thank you. Next on the docket is Andy. Andy, how would you recast Neil Page?
I think Jer and I weren't too far apart in our thinking, though we certainly landed at very different actors. I was also trying to think of an actor who could kind of play that icy executive, but also have a major freak out. And when I thought of that, I instead went to Kevin Spacey. Specifically, I was thinking of his performance in American Beauty. Not so much the just kind of screw it, going to go live my own life for a while, but kind of the scene in American Beauty when he's trying to get romantic with his wife and he has a beer bottle in his hand and all she can think about is that he's going to spill beer on the couch and he kind of freaks out about it. It was where I was going with that. So plus Kevin Spacey, I can just imagine him in the car rental agency just shooting lasers out of his eyes, just melting the poor woman on the other side of the counter because he would just rip her to shreds. That was my my mental pathway from Steve Martin to Kevin Spacey.
Yep, he was on my A list as well. He was one of my almost one of my picks for that as well. My only concern with him is that Steve Martin has such empathy to him, and I feel like Spacey almost could lack an empathy with that. He can come dangerously close of being smug at times, and if that's kept in check, he can be really effective. And I think American Beauty was a really good balance of that. But there's just such a tendency to fall on the smug side with him. And so
I totally agree that he would play that one a little more. Or like, I think even if he was to try to play it empathetic, people would take that as sort of his verbal Kent character in Usual Suspects, where he's just playing you for a fool. You know, like he appears to be empathetic and, you know, caring for you, but really he's just looking to stick a dagger in your back.
Mm-hmm. But I think he played empathetic in Pay It Forward.
I totally agree.
Yeah,
great example.
Much, much softer side of him.
I also liked him in, and I can't think of the name of the movie at the top of my head, and if I had a quieter keyboard, I would look it up. The movie with Dennis Leary as the cat burglar.
The Ref? No.
I believe that you're right.
I believe it is the Ref.
He was the husband, and I picture that manifestation of Kevin Spacey where he's... In a similar way that Steve Martin is in the movie, just kind of a beaten down kind of guy. The world's kind of gotten the best of him, and here walks this guy that seems to just be full of life, and it just irritates him. And Kevin Spacey, I think, in The Ref would play a similar character, although there is a little bit of that. I'm an important person, and let me buy my way out of this or talk my way out of this. And that, like you said, could come off as smugness, but I see a similar type of beaten down personality in that role from the Ref.
At the same time, though, Jerry, if he was to play it that way with a little more of the, hey, listen, let me just get on my wallet and we can discuss this and we can come to a resolution, could lead for some really nice build up to a scene where finally that's not an option for him anymore and he must truly kind of come to grips with the rest of the world instead of being able to buy his way out of it.
Yeah.
You know, so it could make, when you were talking about that blow-up scene at the end between Steve Martin and John Candy, like that could be a component of that that would lead to that relationship truly crumbling.
Yep.
And let's not forget that Steve Martin's character, Neil Page, does in fact have to bargain in a few occasions in Transplants and Automobiles.
That's right. He sells his watch for a hotel room.
Mm-hmm. And he also buys a cab ride from the man who had hailed the cab, ultimately stolen by John Candy's character.
That's right. Yep.
That's true.
Yep. Good examples. All right. Good pick. So I'm up next, and for my choice, I decided to go with John Cusack. It skews a little bit younger here, but I think in my mind, I was thinking of kind of the dot-commy, got rich really quick and is very willing to use money to get him anywhere. So a lot of that exact same type of discussion. So maybe we could, instead of having him be a marketing exec, he could be either a stock market exec or a web exec or something like that. But that's kind of what I was thinking. And the thing that really tipped me over with Cusack was one of the things that I love the most about Steve Martin's performance in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles is the physicality of that. It's very much a reined-in character in terms of who he is, but then there's so many of those little Steve Martinisms. Like when he's chasing after the cab, he's doing that exaggerated kind of flailing arm thing that he did. You can see the hint of King Tut on SNL. You know, I mean, you can see it almost betrays the character a little bit, but it also makes it more human and more interesting. So it's just that so much of Steve Martin is that, you know, is that kind of exaggeration. And I think that John Cusack could do that really, really well. I think of like High Fidelity, where he had those extremes, same kind of thing, where he had those very, very low moments and very calm. But then there's the scene of, you know, him knocking the teeth out of Tim Robbins and just, you know, he freaks out many times. And I think that range of physicality, I think, would make him a really good choice for that role.
His emotional range in that movie is, you're right. I mean, thinking about it objectively, it's completely exaggerated and a little buffoonish, but yet that's what makes the character so good. And I could see how him as Neil Page could use that same kind of range to go, you know, the whole gamut of truly freaking out to being calm, cool, and collected, and even a little depressed.
I could see him definitely playing the beaten down, just wants to get home and see his family, and the world is out trying to stop him mentality from him. What I can't see is that breaking point moment with him. It when I picture it, it feels a lot angrier than the Steve Martin freak out. It's more seething than it is just a blow up.
Interesting.
It would be interesting to look at the characters a little bit differently if John Cusack was playing this executive, but yet had the subtext from Del Griffith's character that really he doesn't have a home to go to, and seems like he's going somewhere, but the other character of the two would be the one who maybe is a little more buffoonish, but actually has the family, so that it could provide a little anarchy to John Cusack's character, where he's trying to look all put together and look at me, I made all my money in stocks or whatever, but really he doesn't have anything beyond that. So that could kind of make him a little more of a shell of a man.
Interesting. I never thought about that. I like that. That's a whole different twist to that. I like that. That's a whole different remake. Nice. Okay, great. Next up on the docket is Mark. Mark, who would you recast in this role?
Well, thinking about Steve Martin's performance in this film, and it's a tough thing to pull off, having to maintain all those different types of pissed off. But there are many. There are many. Oh, I could tell you. But one of the things that I felt was really important to the character was those moments of tenderness when Steve Martin softened up, such as, you know, inviting Del to share his hotel room near the end of the film, and, you know, certainly at the climax of the film, when the big reveal of Del's situation comes about. I mean, there's some very sincere moments. I think that tenderness was pretty important. So trying to get somebody who could be composed, but then, you know, just slowly lose it, and then still come back to humanity, Well, I went with Ed Helms, one of the stars of The Office and of the Hangover films. And who else? I loved him in Jeff Who Lives at Home. But I think he really can get all those different facets to the character.
I like that one.
Yeah, I do as well. I think he has a non-traditional iciness. I think he can have a little bit of that, but I think it's not his MO, but I think he could do it really, really well in that role. And I think the warmth that he could project, that switch to that, I think would be really potent.
He's the kind of iciness that he's almost like the quiet guy you never see or you never suspect. You know, excuse me. And then when he does flip that switch, it's you know, catastrophic.
It's always the quiet ones.
It's always the quiet ones. And I agree, Mark. And Jeff Who Lives at Home, I thought he was great as just being this overcompensating, shallow, you know, kind of wannabe exec or whatever he was in that movie. But yet kind of underneath everything below that image that he was trying to project was just crumbly.
Yep, that's a great pick, Mark. I like that.
Thank you.
All right. Next on the docket is Lee. Lee, who would you recast in the role?
Well, I was thinking in terms of, you know, how Steve Martin's character is very Midwestern, waspy, doesn't really like drama, and yet he has a lot of drama unleashed on him. I think somebody in that role needs to play it, you know, almost like they're floating through every scene in a sense. They're trying to keep it together and they're doing a good job, but, you know, there's only so much someone can take. And I went with Edward Norton because I think he has the range of playing all those, I guess, quiet emotions that you can just kind of see in his face, but he doesn't outwardly express. And he does have the physicality, as demonstrated in, like, Death to Smoochie and Fight Club, both classics.
Both excellent movies.
But, yeah, that was my pick. I just kind of pictured him in that role immediately because I think it's, at least for now, for today, that would be the perfect casting choice for that role.
Yeah, nobody does denial quite like Edward Norton. He just has that. He has that stew thing where it's like he can convince himself to be or do anything he wants, and I think that is such a great, great trait for this role.
Well, and I think similar to your Cusack pick, the Boyle would be excellent to watch. Just building another layer, and now this happened, and now this happened, just heaping on these calamities one after the other, until you just can't take it anymore.
Until he beats the crap out of himself, a la Fight Club.
And he can explode. If you've seen American History X, he's good at exploding.
Yes, I agree.
Oof, that still hurts thinking about that. All right. Well, good picks, everybody. So just in kind of in summation here, for the role of Neil Page, originally played by Steve Martin, Andy chose Kevin Spacey. Jer chose Martin Freeman. Kyle chose John Cusack. Lee chose Edward Norton. And Mark chose Ed Helms. So great, great refined picks, everybody. And just to talk a little bit about what this has at stake as far as the picks go, what we're going to do is we're going to convene amongst ourselves, and we're going to basically pick who the winner is of this. So who had the best picks overall? So that takes into account major actors and then in this particular case, minor characters as well. So we're going to get together and say, you know, Lee, your picks were the best today. And because of that, Lee will then have the opportunity to pick the next movie. We've all talked before. We've come up with a list of movies from which we can pick. And then we will pick the next movie to talk about on the next episode of Remakers, Mark. So that is what goes into that. So it's not just us getting to say this. There's a little bit of friendly competition behind it. Because if anything, we are friendly competition folk.
I'm not.
Except for Mark. Mark is not.
I hate you.
So does Andy. So, carrying on to the next major role, we have the great, the late John Candy as the role of, or in the role of Del Griffith.
Taken too soon.
Yeah, here, yeah. Here. Mm-hmm. So I had Del described as the seemingly unmovable and unflappable force that persistently manages to get in the way of Neil Page's trip home. Del Griffith is a big man with a big heart and a big tendency to annoy Neil Page with every word and action. So he, you know, he's a very strong personality, and you love him and hate him equally throughout the movie. But one of the things that I thought was most interesting about John Candy and his performance here is that you never lose the warmth of that. And I think a lot of that is in the writing, but it's a lot of it is in the performance. So I think that's what really speaks to me in this role. So Lee, you went last and the last time. So why don't you say who you would cast as Del Griffith?
Well, this one was a little tougher for me to narrow down. I guess I thought of a lot of different people for it. I guess, you know, the most, I don't know, defining characteristic of Del is, like you said, is warmth. So I went with an actor who, frankly, I'm a little tired of right now, but I think it would be a good role for him because he can play annoying very well. And I think it would also be a stretch for him. And that was Seth Rogen.
That's not who I thought you were going to say. Nice pick.
Mm.
Nor I. Well, I was expecting something else.
I went with him because, you know, he's younger. I mean, he looks like he's middle-aged, but he's younger. And maybe that could be, you know, a different... Maybe that could take the story in a different direction. Like, you know, there's possibly a little bit more hope at the end because of his age, and he's not already in his 40s or 50s.
So. That's a great point. That's an interesting factor. Absolutely. I think one of the things that we're going to face in this podcast is, we had sort of spoken about like what Joe Hollywood, the owner and runner of Hollywood apparently would want to cast and who we would want to cast. And sometimes there can be a pretty wide swath between there. And so it's balancing like what you want and what you think would be successful and finding the balance between those. So I think that's something that we'll have to tackle as we go along. And that's a really interesting discussion. Sometimes the best person for the role is not the person that anyone would ever pick. And sometimes the person that they would pick is a great choice, but it's maybe not who you would ideally pick. So you try to find that balance.
Exactly. Yeah. It was, like I said, you know, I think he's a little overexposed personally as an actor, but I went with him because I thought he'd be perfect for it.
I think one of the things that he can bring is, and this would be, like you said, a stretch for him, but I could see it happening, is that the character of Del, while getting in the way a lot, in the movie never really causes any of the problems. He's just sort of there throughout them. A couple of times he causes the problems at times, but really he's not the antagonist of the movie.
Right.
The world itself is the antagonist, and he's just sort of along there for the ride, and the two of them butting heads. But I think that Seth Rogen would play the lovable but not dopey character. I think that he would have to push himself out of that "I'm kind of a stoner dope" that he plays a lot, and be more of just an affable, lovable kind of guy that everybody just wants to hug and get out of that, like, I'm just a goof and I'm a screw up and blah, blah, blah. Cause he's not the screw up in the movie. He's just trying to live his life just like Steve Martin's character.
Right. And I think I was thinking in terms of annoying, but in a non-threatening way. And that's what I think, that's one of the things that Seth Rogen and John Candy have in common.
I like that.
Sort of an unintended incompetence towards other things.
Exactly. That's a good way to put it.
Mm-hmm. I'm gonna call a slight audible here, and you'll know why in about two shakes of a lamb's tail. And I'm going to ask Mark, if you wouldn't mind chiming in on who your pick was for recasting the John Candy role.
Sure. Although I have to say that I think this was actually in the play that we called. But
you're audibling the same call the coach called.
It's genius. Just to keep us on our toes, really.
Oh, it is. What do you know?
So you're really just affirming then. You're not audibling.
Yes.
You're just affirming.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I'm tricksy that way.
It's we do need our daily affirmations. So in the thinking about lovable oafs and people that everybody wants to hug, I think there are a number of great actors that do that shtick, but one of the things that I really needed from an actor to play Del Griffith was again, the sincerity, the humanity. And really, it wouldn't be a John Hughes film without it.
Indeed.
Mm-hmm. So, I too went with Seth Rogen.
What?
What?
Yep. And I think we really get all those character aspects from him. And I think we've seen that in 50/50.
Fantastic movie.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. Where he plays the best friend of a cancer patient, and he tries to be lighthearted and edgy, but really, really supportive. I think we've seen that in what was the thing? Funny People. There we go. You know, trying to solve all the problems of Adam Sandler's character.
And I've still not seen that. I need to see that.
It's definitely worth it.
Very good. Well, I'm glad you guys agreed. That's wonderful.
Yeah, it's good to see we're on the same page, Lee.
Yes, hence the audible, I guess.
Yeah, same page. Sorry. Same page.
Oh.
Yes.
Neil Page.
That was my audible, was that joke, clearly.
Terrible.
And I caught it for a touchdown.
Nice. We are dorks, and I love it.
We know sports.
All right. I don't care who knows. All right, so I am up next, and you know, we've talked a lot about the warmth and the sincerity of what goes into casting a character like Del Griffith. And I looked at a lot of... I had Seth Rogen on my list, and I decided upon somebody that was a little bit different and would add definitely a different dynamic to the remake, and that is Melissa McCarthy. You probably first knew her from The Gilmore Girls, where she played almost an overly naive, very sweet, very innocent friend of Lorelai Gilmore. And since then, she's really broke out with Bridesmaids, was her big breakout role, and she's got a television show I know as well, and she's just doing gangbusters right now. And I think for me, her shtick is starting to run a little thin in terms of kind of the and a lot of this is reinforced by what she did on Saturday Night Live, but kind of the sort of hypersexualized, very manic, kind of out of control, but yet sweet sort of thing. So what I want in her is to build upon the sweetness that she started with the Gilmore Girls role and bring in some of that manicness from what she's done since then. And I think that she's amazingly talented. And I think if directed well, I think she could really capture that sweetness. And I think her eyes are just amazing. And her face is such that she could do that range of emotion where she can do silly, she can do goofy, she can do someone that you want to hate, and then 2 seconds later, you will love them. I just think her range is really astounding. And I think that she is sort of being backed into a corner in terms of roles. And I think this is an opportunity to know where her strengths are and then adapt that a little bit as well and try to do something that's a little bit more subtle than what she is doing, but types into those strengths.
Well, it's a good thing we're in contact with Joe Hollywood. She'll have these opportunities.
I think that would be a fantastic choice. And if I may be so bold, if we were going to take this audible into left field a little farther, like that two sports references there.
There you go.
If we were going to make this an all-female cast as to who would be the female version of Neil Page, may I suggest Tina Fey?
Ooh, there you go.
I don't know. I don't know if she's too goofy, but she kind of popped into mind if I thought, well, those two could be. She could do the blow-up scene in hilarity, I think. I don't know if she could do the seething kind of, or just, you know, callous executive It might be a stretch for her a little bit in terms of what she's already done, but it could be fun to watch.
I like it. Yeah, definitely.
She did a very similar freak out in Baby Daddy.
Baby Mama.
Baby Mama. Yeah, that makes more sense logically.
That's how that works now. That's how babies are made.
There was a couple of good freak out moments on Amy Poehler in that movie that I could see being. In some ways, it's kind of a similar design of that movie, the two of them and the free-spirited, goofy, loves life, and then the other one. But yeah, I could see that.
Very cool.
Bedell's excellent All choice right. on Melissa McCarthy.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. So next, Andy, you are up to bat. Who would you cast as Del Griffith?
I think we all kind of went down the same path of there needs to be some humanity, some goof, some, the lovable aspect needs to be very at the forefront of this character for us to not dismiss this person as just completely annoying within the first 5-10 minutes or something like that. My choice, I think, wouldn't be the best at it from what I've seen, but I think could be, if he could be stretched into this role, I would be very curious to see that performance. Because I really do think, honestly, that he is trying to pick up the mantle of John Candy's comedy where John Candy left it. And he does it in a slightly more juvenile form right now. And it would be interesting to see him try to take it to that true John Candy level. And my choice is Kevin James.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Again, not who I was expecting you to say.
Oh, interesting. I think Kevin James, we can see the physical similarities in terms of his comedy stylings. He's a big guy who likes to fall down and go boom and make people laugh. And I think he has that lovable quality. That's not something that he's lacking at all. I think what he does lack is a little bit more of that grown-up style of humor. A little less of the pratfalls and more of, you know, just the comedy aspect that John Candy really had. If that makes sense, what I'm trying to say. But it would be interesting to see him try to do that. I think Del's mentioned this, if written and directed well, I think he could do that role well.
I completely agree. He acted good. He acted pretty one day. He was on my short list as well. So the first two that I had, I sort of compared and contrasted. So the other one, two of the other ones I had were Jack Black and Kevin James. And for me, Jack Black fit the manic nature of the character, but didn't quite have the quote unquote everyday guy-ness as Candy. Yeah. And I think that Kevin James is a little bit lacking in some of the manic energy, but his sweetness is really unrivaled.
And yeah, I think he has that in spades. So it's the other things that would be interesting. I had a backup choice, and I'll throw it out there, and you can edit this out later if you don't want to hear it. But I thought Will Ferrell might be interesting in that role as well. It might be a little too much of a heavy hitter in that role, but I think he could kind of do he's done the bumbling before, but to do it in less of a, the other guy's movie and more of just like, he's just trying to live his life and do his thing. He just happens to be incredibly unlucky, clumsy, these other things. Instead of just being more of a character, like more of a caricature of comedy and more of a character, if that makes sense.
Yep. I like how Jer described how the world happens to him. He doesn't happen to the world in terms of his misfortunes. And it reminds me of, I like Will Ferrell, and I think his shtick is running a little bit thin for me, but in Stranger Than Fiction, he was extraordinary for that exact reason. And quite literally the world happened to him, I mean, he was all of a sudden thrust into this scenario in this world where he doesn't know what's going on and everything is happening to him and he can't explain it. And I think that you get that strength of him of that energy and that humor. But at the same time, you sense that underlying fear and uncertainty and confusion. And I think that that's a really something that if you could tap into in that would be great.
Agreed.
Yeah. Stranger Than Fiction was immediately what I thought of when you mentioned his name.
Same here.
Very similar role, I think. Or attitude toward a role.
it's a quieter role for him. And yeah. I think he pulled off, you know, the empathetic side of that character really well.
Definitely. Okay, so that was a great discussion on the role of Del Griffith. So in summary, Andy.
Do I get to go?
Oh, Jer.
No.
No. Sorry. No.
Sorry.
Jump the gun. Jump the gun. Jeremy, who might you pick in this role?
Well, I'm going to audible and not pick anybody.
Oh.
Home run. I will audible and throw a home run. And I looked at this character as similar to you guys. Obviously, the main aspects are somebody that everyone's going to want to hug at the end of the movie and multiple times throughout the movie. But also somebody who's kind of, they're not lost without Neil Page. They're surviving. They're doing fine on their own. They've just got a lot of stuff internally with, you know, his wife and being homeless and all that. He's just like Neil Page, but in a very different way, beaten down by the world and is making the best of that and has a different attitude than Neil Page. And it's his attitude that makes you want to be his friend. And it's knowing the backstory that makes you want to hug him. I was looking for somebody that would be a good foil for my first choice, Martin Freeman, in that style. And I came up with Steve Zahn, Minnesota's own Steve Zahn. He's played a couple of roles that I've really liked him in. He's had a lot of good cameo roles or minor roles in some movies, all the way back to Daddy Daycare as the nerd dad or whatever you want to call that character. I thought he was fantastically funny in that. He also was great in Happy Texas. Did you guys see that one?
Yeah, that was just kind was of great a, in that one.
A little bumbling, but just very good natured. And I think that's the key aspect that I was looking for in this role is somebody that's just good natured. And no matter what happens to him and no matter what you say to him, he's never going to lose that. He's always going to look for the silver lining and greet everything with the best smile he can muster. I thought his character in Sahara as Al Giardino, the sidekick, showed a lot of his wit and charm and just good naturedness in the face of all these other things happening. And obviously, it's a very different movie, but I could see him, especially paired with a quieter Martin Freeman. It would be a very different movie. I think the comedy would come in different points than it does with Steve Martin, John Candy. But I think that pairing would work really well together as they both are more, they act more with their words and how they deliver things and their facial expressions and how they react than with, like Del said, with Steve Martin, big motions and flailing arms and John Candy just being a bigger guy. I think they fill the stage in different ways, the screen rather, now that it's not the screen.
The vaudeville era is dead, Jer.
Not to me.
Talkies are going to ruin the industry, I tell you.
I think, Jer, I think I agree with you that Steve Zahn, to me, represents like the guy who, no matter what the circumstances, he's always in a good mood or always has a joke. And I think that was a big part of John Candy's portrayal as Del Griffith, was that he always seemed to have, he always had like that one quick one-off solution. He always had a good mood. He was always like, oh, he's always optimistic. And I think that Steve Zahn has a lot of that in his characters. So I like that.
Are you saying I might be stuck in Wichita? I'm saying you are stuck in Wichita.
Very nice. All right. So I apologize for cutting you off, Jer. I will be permanently fired as host and will be taken out back. And, well, you guys seen Old Yeller, right? It's a lot like that. And to summarize, yet again, Yes, that's exactly right. It's a great rockabilly band from Minneapolis. So Andy chose Kevin James. Jer chose Steve Zahn. I chose Melissa McCarthy. And both Lee and Mark chose Seth Rogen in the role of Del Griffith, originally made famous by John Candy. So moving on, it is now time to talk about the minor characters in this movie. And as we said, there's really two major roles, but there are so many wonderful, colorful minor characters that they have the opportunity to come upon throughout their travels and their struggles. And instead of all of us casting all of them, we each basically picked one to talk about and to recast for this particular instance. So first and foremost is me. First is me.
Wow. Totally foremost.
I'll cut that out.
It's all about me. It's all about me.
Hi, I'm Kyle. Do you guys know me? You should. First is the character of Neil Page's wife, and she could almost be a major character. She's certainly more present than any of the minor characters, but she is not... she's not someone that is considered a major character in my mind. So for this role, she was somebody who was, she was at home. Most of her interactions were either with her kids or on her phone, with Steve Martin's character. And so one of the things that drew me to her was that she had to be, someone that you empathized with because you wanted him to come home. She had to be someone that was stable, someone that you cared for, but you could sense the frustration and kind of the coldness there a little bit as well. Especially at the end, at the very end where she's standing on the stairwell. And it's, you can't quite tell if she's happy to see him, but there's a sadness there and I think a frustration too. And the person that I thought could capture that really well would be Julia Louis-Dreyfus of Seinfeld fame and of Saturday Night Live fame. I think by virtue of casting her, it would already put a little bit of a weight on that role. And I think you could almost, play to that, like have it be even a less screen time role. But I think just the amount of time that she would be on there, just her presence there would really give a lot of weight to that. And I don't think she would have to be anything other than really subdued and really interesting, because I think she does that very well. She doesn't have to have a Elaine Benesette-esque explosion or anything like that. But I just think that she captures both the warmth and the frustration and the uncertainty really, really well.
Very I could nice. Get behind that.
Cool.
I like that idea. I would have never pictured that, but I really like how you explained it, so that's a great choice.
Thank you.
I've never been a fan of hers, but she's always been too whiny for me, but I can see like you said, you really don't know, is she just putting up with this? Does she, like, where is she at? And I think that she could bring about that with not a lot of lines or screen time.
Yeah, you're not given a lot of backstory in the original Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. You don't know the status of their relationship, and you don't know how much he loves her or she loves him. I mean, they have kids together, so that certainly says something. They're married, which certainly says something, but you get some of that, when are you going to be home? There's concern there, but you don't get, it doesn't give up the ghost in terms of being like, oh, I can't wait for you to come home. It's never quite that effusive. It's more balanced, and I think that's really interesting.
There's a hint of the exasperation of, like, when are you coming home? get your ass home kind of a thing. Yep. But I kind of picked up that I think Julia Louis-Dreyfus could do very well with very minimal dialogue. But she could just kind of express that very well through facial expressions and her just behaviors without having to talk it out.
Absolutely. All right, so the next minor role that we're going to recast is Kevin Bacon. And no, we're not saying that is who it is recast, but rather that is who originally played it. And he played the role of Taxi Racer, as we're calling him. Towards the beginning of the movie, one of the first frustrations that Steve Martin's character happens upon is trying to catch a cab while leaving a meeting late. And he happens to have a stare down and then a chase with someone who is also trying to catch a taxi. And that happens to be Kevin Bacon. So Jer, who would you recast to this role?
Well, before that, I mean, let's be honest. Wouldn't you recast all of these roles as Kevin Bacon?
That's very true.
So,
good point.
Well, it's a very minor role, obviously. One scene, and it's the very beginning of the movie before The real calamity begins, but it's sort of the setting the stage for, yep, everything's going to go wrong for this guy. And what's the very first thing that happens as he's trying to make the six is he gets downstairs to the street to grab a cab in rush hour to get to the airport, and sees a cab down at the end of the block, and across the street, somebody else, Kevin Bacon, of course, sees the cab. They might make eye contact, and they foot race to get to the cab first. And obviously, like we said before, Steve Martin does eventually win that race, but then ending up trying to bargain his way into the cab with somebody else that gets there, gets it lost by John Candy. So very quick scene. No lines at all. A lot of movement, a lot of facial expressions and eyes and things. And so I chose Mads Mikkelsen because we've already seen in the movie Valhalla Rising that Mads Mikkelsen can act without speaking.
He can, indeed.
He can embody a role with eyes, with glares, with you know, everything that's happening in his mind without having to speak a word.
He also weeps blood.
And also in some of the other things that he's been in minor roles, Clash of the Titans and some of these other things, I think that it would offer a difference to that character. There would be a much, much more of an intense beginning, almost a waging a war against this other businessman that he's never met before to get to this cab. And I think it would really set the stage well that Steve Martin ultimately won that battle with Mads Mikkelsen or Kevin Bacon, but in the end, it still didn't work out for him. And that's really what the base of the movie is that as much as he tries, as much as he has these little victories along the way, it ultimately always falls apart until the very end when he ultimately gets home. But, so there's my pick, Mads Mikkelsen as Taxi Racer.
Bold.
Very bold.
It's surprising, yet not at all. All right. Moving on to the next character, we have Andy. Andy, I believe the character's name is Owen, but how would you describe Owen in the original Planes, Trains, and Automobiles?
Owen is, he leads a simple life. He likes to wear layers. In fact, I think in the scene in the movie he's wearing, I think I counted six layers. He drives a truck. He wears mud. Probably not mud covered boots. He has a strong wife.
A man of the earth.
He's a man.
Skinny but
he's
strong.
He's a man of the earth who can't spit very well.
Yep.
But is polite enough to wipe the spit off of his face before shaking your hand with the hand that he just wiped the spit off of his face. Is played brilliantly in the original by Dylan Baker.
Yes.
I chose for my arena, I went down a list of what I was looking for in this character. First, I kind of went obvious, and I was like, maybe I should go with Jim Carrey. I was like, it's too goofy, too Ace Ventura. But then I was like, maybe I could do some sort of look-alike, you know, someone who kind of looked like him. And I was like, Matthew Lillard. No, he couldn't do what I would want him to do. So actually, the guy that I picked has already been mentioned in this podcast in another role. But I think he would be really creepy and could pull off the comedy in such a creepy way that he would be forever etched in people's memory. I picked Edward Norton as Owen, the man of the earth.
I like this.
Truck driving taxi to Stubville.
I agree. I think he could pull it off.
Yep. Was this informed at all by Moonrise Kingdom, Andy?
I admit that I recently did see Moonrise Kingdom and loved it, but no, it wasn't. I don't know if there's a movie of his that I've seen that to me was like, oh yeah, that's Owen right there. No, it was just, I could just picture him in that role and, it seemed really funny to me. So Edward Norton.
I like it. Bold.
Genius. Love it. Genius. Love it.
Let's have a show of podcast hands. How many people thought he was going to say Mads Mikkelsen? That's what I thought. Okay.
My second choice is Meryl Streep.
It always is.
It always is Meryl Streep.
It's everyone's second choice.
Oh, ouch.
All right. Moving on to the next minor character. There is a state trooper towards the end of the movie after they happen to set their car on fire. They have a melted speedometer, and so they can't tell how fast they're going. They're singing along to not Rocky Mountain High. What is it? Something Kentucky? They're having a great time singing along, driving along, and they happen to be doing 78 miles per hour and get pulled over by a state trooper, originally played by Michael McKean. Mark, who would you recast in this role?
Well, when I rewatched the film, I was honestly surprised that Michael McKean was in it. I had no memory of him being there. And I guess a little bit more surprised that I was pretty disappointed in him. And playing a state trooper, you do need somebody that can be pretty straight-laced, pretty stoic. But, you know, there's some very good comedy to be had in that sort of portrayal. And, you know, Michael McKean usually does do the very subtle, very straight sort of characters. Didn't do it for me in this one. So, I opted for Will Arnett instead.
Perfect.
Good choice.
Like it.
Thank Nailed you. It. That's yeah, awesome.
I think that that he really can play a very, very straight, serious character and make you laugh while doing it. And I think that's what I need from this character.
Yep. The only thing with Will Arnett to me is that he needs, and I love the hell out of Job, mind you, from Arrested Development, but he needs to be like removed from that like one more year maybe, because it's so closely identified. I don't know if you guys, did anybody watch the series 6 Feet Under on HBO or on Netflix or whatever?
Absolutely.
Okay. So do you remember, and now it will almost seem surprising, but Rainn Wilson was in that. And he was a role in that I thought was completely indelible, that I would never, ever think of him as anyone else ever again, right? It was just very weird, very unique.
Yeah.
And now you think back to that, it's like, well, you know, Rainn Wilson is Dwight Schrute from The Office, right? Well, I never thought he could be anybody else but that. And I think Will Arnett needs to have that escape from Job. You know, he needs to have that. And I love that character to death. I think it's hilarious. But I think every time I see him, I don't expect him to be Job, but I kind of do, you know?
So we all expect him to be Job.
Yeah, need to have that sort of separation a little bit. But I love that choice. Maybe this is the start of that.
It doesn't help that in some of the roles that he's taken since then, he still plays Job, like in Blades of Glory.
Yes.
As the brother of the skater.
Yeah.
I mean, he's just Job.
Essentially, yeah.
Yeah.
And I think he's more talented than that. Yep.
Yeah. And in 30 Rock, he's very much Job as well. Just a gay Job.
Yep.
He had a guest appearance on Parks and Rec, and he was basically Job on that too.
I will say, I think he does a much more normal and mature character on his series Up All Night.
Oh, I've not watched that.
Can't say I've seen it.
It's good primetime television. Very funny. With Christina Applegate as well. And Maya Rudolph.
Nice.
Very funny people, all of them.
Mm-hmm. Maya Rudolph does a great sort of Oprah Winfrey sort of character. They're very funny in that role.
Great. I'll add that to my queue. Excellent. All right. And last but not least in our minor characters, Lee, you get the distinct pleasure of recasting what is maybe the most famous scene in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, that of the interaction after Steve Martin has been through hell and back trying to get a rental car, and he comes upon a very, very sweet-faced, very blustery woman at the car rental desk and proceeds to have one of the more foul exchanges in movie history, which is glorious. So who would you recast as car rental lady?
Well, it's... I think that scene was the reason it's rated R. But yeah, I was thinking of someone who could play very cheerfully insincere. And I thought of Caitlin Olsen from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Very nice.
I think she would be absolutely perfect in that. And I think she could deliver the last line perfectly.
Agreed.
But I love it.
But yeah, she's got that great way of, you know, appearing that she's being polite and, you know, cordial, but it's all a ruse and you can tell. But she, you know, she keeps it going. And it's, I think she's the best at it. So, yep, that's great. That was my pick.
I love it. Very good. Well, so, oh, go ahead, Jer.
I was just going to say, to tag along with the that scene, what makes that scene work so well for me is that the whole rest of the movie, there's nothing like that. There's little to no swearing through the entire movie until you hit that point, and it just punctuates it so much more because of that. If the whole movie were foul-mouthed, that wouldn't have been funny.
Oh, very much.
Right.
But because it was a left field, you know, that yet another perfect Steve Martin boiling over moment, and it was so shocking. Like that, I think that's what makes it so perfectly punctuated in that movie for me.
Mm-hmm. I think the contrast between that scene and the rest of the movie is very much like the contrast between the two main characters. They're just almost polar opposites.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep, I like that. Very well put. All right, so we captured our minor characters. We captured our major characters. Those are great picks, everybody. Thanks. Kind of along those lines, Lee, I thought, you know, in remaking a movie, one of the things you have to think about is your audience and ratings. And you know, do you want to make an R-rated movie? Do you want to make a PG movie? Do you want to make a PG-13 movie? And, you know, standards have certainly changed since 1987 when this was originally made. But I think when remaking it, I thought, you know, maybe we don't want it to be that foul. Maybe we want to, you know, kind of capture that edge, but we don't want the F word in there, right? Maybe we want to pull that back a little bit. We want this to be acceptable to as many people as possible. You know, working with this podcast, I've had the opportunity to do a little audio editing, you know, taking tracks and mixing them up. And so I've put something together here that I want you guys to listen to. And, I just want you to take a listen and let me know what you think in terms of maybe if we were to remake that scene, what it could be like, what it could sound like. That. So here, let me cue this up and let's take a listen. So this is how I propose we remake the car rental scene if we want to tame the rating a little bit. So here, take a listen.
Welcome to Marathon. May I help you?
Yes.
How may I help you?
You can start by wiping that
kittens!
Dumbass smile off your rosy
kittens!
Cheeks. Then you can give me a
kittens!
Automobile, a
kittens!
Datsun, a
kittens!
Toyota, a
kittens!
Mustang, a
kittens!
Buick, four
kittens!
Wheels and a seat.
I really don't care for the way you're speaking to me.
And I really don't care for the way your company left me in the middle of
kittens!
Nowhere with
kittens!
Keys to a
kittens!
Car that isn't
kittens!
There. And I really didn't care to
kittens!
Walk down a
kittens!
Highway and across a
kittens!
Runway to get back here to have you smile at my
kittens!
Face. I want a
kittens!
Car right
kittens!
Now.
May I see your rental agreement?
I threw it away.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy, what?
Your kittens!
Yeah, so that's how I would remake the scene. What do you guys think about that? How does that feel to you?
It's G-rated.
It's tamer. I'll give you that.
Okay, sure.
Uh-huh. I mean, I think, who doesn't love kittens?
It's true.
It loses the gut punch aspect of it.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's okay. You've done good work here, Kyle.
Thank you.
Certainly, the prevalence of kittens in this scene is going to make it appeal to a much younger and, you know, more pure audience, which mm-hmm. seems entirely appropriate.
A more internet-based audience, perhaps.
Mm-hmm. Perhaps.
Well, it turns out that there is some research out of the Joe Hollywood Agency, and it turns out that Crazy Cat Ladies actually consist of 95% of box office. So It's really just a sales coup mostly, but I feel good about it. Thank you. Thanks for saying that. I'm excited about that.
Well done.
Well, and I think you could introduce a new curse word into our vernacular, which is always a good thing.
The old ones are getting stale. It's time for a new one.
That's true. It's true. Well, I can't wait to get this kittens podcast over with.
Oh, there it is.
Hi-oh. All right. So now we're going to wrap up the first half of our episode on Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. So we've talked about major character casting, minor character casting. We've remade some audio to try to make it maybe a little bit family friendly. So thank you guys for listening. We really appreciate it. Again, this is the first of two episodes. The next one will be released in a week from today. So we're recording it on the 17th. Not sure when it'll be published, but we hope to publish them one right after the other. That will again be dealing with Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, and we'll be talking about what plot changes we might have, what filmmaking changes we might have, maybe a director change, for example, and what technology could play in this. So I just want to thank everybody, all my panelists again here. So thanks so much for helping out, gentlemen. You did a wonderful job as always. If you want to find out more about the podcast, or if you wish to subscribe either in iTunes or via RSS, you can go to mathishard.net and look up Remakers Mark on there. You can find us on Twitter at mathishardnet, and you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/mathishardnet. So, gentlemen, thanks for your great picks, and we'll see you all next week. May the force be with you.
And also with you.